favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
Guys, I've come here to chew bubblegum and hug my friends, and I'm all out of friends.
I mean, that's just true.
Yeah. At least in this room.
He didn't hug me, so I guess he doesn't like me anymore. It's fine.
I'm sorry. Well, I don't think you hug anybody, yeah.
Just gave her a little fucking pat on the back, just a slug in the shoulder.
I think he's one of friends.
Hang in there, get your shit together.
We're friends there, slugger.
Alright, well, on that fucking note, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, Anthony Fuentes.
Obey.
Phil Acevedo.
Hi.
Joining us this week, Wyatt Turner.
Consume.
Nobody said reproduce.
Marry and reproduce. This week, we are kicking off our season 5.
Finale month. Oh shit.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Holy shit.
Goddamn, time flies.
Half a decade. Fuck me.
Doesn't it feel like yesterday was January?
Yeah, seriously, man. This whole year's been going by insanely fucking fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And this week we are kicking off July with a pick by Anthony Fuentes.
That's right, because we haven't covered this director in a long time, and he is one of our faves.
Yes.
And this might be one of his best. We'll find out.
And I happened to bump into him recently at the airport.
That's true, why?
Fucking A, that's awesome.
Yeah. Weird.
Mm-hmm.
We're covering They Live from 1988. Very excited to just...
They Live!
That's Southern California, LA jazz.
Yep.
But it sounds really Southern as fuck.
That, like, kind of early 80s type of vibe.
Oh, good old Kentucky Carpenter. Yes.
Very excited to talk about it. And kicking us off, Wyatt is going to give us the IMDb synopsis and some credit information before we go ahead and get started.
I did not know that, so I'm being put on the spot. But
yep. Guess always does it.
Guess always, I guess so. They Live. They influence our decisions without us knowing it. They numb our senses without us feeling it. They control our lives without us realizing it. They Live.
Dun, dun, dun,
dude,
dun.
This is probably the best I'm doing synopsis.
They're always shit.
Yeah.
How did this one,
that one's actually well written.
This one kind of fucking rules.
That's kind of actually intriguing. The other ones are usually like, there's the guy who did a thing.
Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
This one kind of fucking rules. I like this one. It's creative.
Yeah.
Maybe John Carpenter wrote it himself.
I know, right? He rolled
sounds like it belongs on the poster.
Yeah, that does, yeah.
So what are we usually rate the IMDb synopsis now. Webster, what would you say?
That was pretty high up there.
I'll give it an 8.
I think because of, like, how well it's presented and how dramatic it is, I'm going fucking 10.
I'm actually going to go 10, too.
Yeah.
The bar's in hell.
Yeah.
It is
the bar. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
Yeah, I'm going to give it, like, a 9 or a 10, I'd say.
Yeah.
There you go. All right.
Well done, whoever wrote that. Based on 8
Chat
O'Clock
GPT.
In the Morning by Ray Nelson. I did not know it was based off of that. Written and directed by John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm. Although the credits say Fred Armitage, it is actually John Carpenter under a pseudonym.
So, is it?
Yeah. He did it because Roddy Piper's performance and take on it was so good, he was like, I can't 100% claim I wrote this, because Roddy contributed so much.
So I'll just make up a name.
When you
to make
it.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Starring Roddy Piper, Keith David, which was cool. I didn't know that until he popped up. I was like, oh, shit.
Yep.
Meg Foster. Box office, the budget was $3 million. That is a speck of what films use nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
Release date November 4th, 1988. Grossed $13 million.
Mm. Not bad.
Ooh.
Very interesting. I mean,
not bad, Mr. Carpenter. All right.
Yeah. Were we any of us alive?
Profit.
Yeah, I was. I was alive.
I was
like
not.
Less than a year already.
In 88?
In 88, yeah.
So everything started going downhill from then.
Pretty much. Dude. As soon as I showed up, dude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I only had a 6-month grace period, and then Phil rolls up in there and just takes everything fucking down.
Damn. Like,
well.
Oh, but we're going to get 80s as hell in this episode, though. So.
Hell yeah. 80,
this movie is 80s as fuck.
Very 80s. And,
so.
You know, we can't talk about the 80s without good old Ronald Reagan. And fuck off, Ronald.
Yep.
So, last time we checked in with John Carpenter, it was for the 1983 killer car flick Christine, which was a huge success for the financially fledgling director. Unfortunately, the success would be short-lived.
Oh, no. Short-lived.
His first offer post-Christine was the exact opposite of that film, but it was something he was actually pretty excited about. Santa Claus, the movie. Yes. This is real.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I bumped into him at the airport, I thought he looked like Santa Claus.
It's because he does look like Santa Claus.
Wait, so there was like a Santa Claus movie in the making with Carpenter?
Uh-huh.
What?
Well, not in the making with Carpenter, as you'll find out right now.
Okay.
Why.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. Carpenter was given 24 hours to think about the offer and came back with a list of demands. 100% creative control, the right to assume scriptwriting duties, being able to co-compose the film's musical score, total editorial control, the casting of Brian Denny as Santa Claus, and a $5 million signing on fee.
Damn, he went Citizen Kane on that.
Yeah.
Needless to say, they turned Carpenter's ass down.
Yeah.
They're lost. Can you picture a Santa Claus movie with Carpenter fucking...
Yeah, Santa Claus with a machine gun. With a fucking machine gun.
Thankfully, he had a few other ideas to work with. Carpenter used his leverage in Hollywood to create films that were very critically acclaimed, like Starman and Big Trouble in Little China. The only issue with his creative output was the whole... movies needing to make money thing, really yeah. Just a passing whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Not really
I mean, Hollywood that. Nowadays doesn't know anything about that.
Dude, for real.
Oh, that Flash budget just...
Dude. The Flash bombing.
Flash bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fact.
His only hit at the time was the horror film Prince of Darkness, which critics found kind of meh. But it was enough for him to get another shot at a project of his choosing, and he wanted to make a statement with his next work.
Oh, mm-hmm. 80s.
John Carpenter fucking hated Ronald Reagan and everything the Reagan Revolution stood for. This came during a time when Reagan's popularity was very high, and even Hollywood was hesitant about antagonizing the Gripper.
The Gipper.
Gipper.
Gripper would be a very different president.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
that
Clinton
era.
We covered both sides, ladies and gentlemen. Both
hilarious.
Sides.
That's hilarious.
The Gipper, Jesus Christ.
That's hilarious.
However, Reagan's desire for deregulation while increasing the surveillance state rubbed Carpenter the wrong way.
That's just two things he hated a lot about Reagan, which we'll find out later on.
Yeah. The director also found the president's most ardent supporters very insufferable, and the culture of consumerism that came along with them.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate.
On this, he says, quote, "So, a lot of the ideals that I grew up with were under assault, and something called a yuppie came into existence, and they just wanted money. And so, by the late 80s, I'd had enough, and I decided I had to make a statement, as stupid and banal as it is, but I made one, and that's They Live. I just love that it was giving the finger to Reagan when nobody else would." Unquote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just a note on that, Carpenter, another late interview that I found today, actually, surprisingly, is because his aunts and his older family members survived the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So he was like a New Deal kind of person growing mm-hmm. up, despite being art and capitalist also.
So,
it's one of those things when he saw Reagan like do things that he knew would result in a depression, he's like, oh no, this ain't good. This ain't good.
This is no good.
I should make a movie about shooting a bunch of people that resemble flowers.
Yeah, you know, let's say.
Yeah. This is the 80s. We get away with all kinds of punk rock shit.
So, Carpenter used the plot structure from 8 o'clock in the morning by Ray Nelson as the basis for his hit piece against conservatism. framing the story about a man who, quote, wakes up from hypnotism only to realize humanity is being controlled by aliens. Now that he had himself a script, he needed a star, and he found one in a rather unconventional way. WrestleMania 3.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, look at the section I gave Phil.
Yeah,
look at
the section I gave. Thank you so much, dude.
Phil over here.
WrestleMania. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Hot Rod is the name of this title for this section. And it was here. During wrestling's quote-unquote big man era, there were few opportunities for smaller wrestlers to make a name for themselves against the likes of Hulk Hogan and Andre the fucking Giant. Mm. Dude, man, I saw, there's this documentary on Andre the Giant. It's fucking
HBO one?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But there was one so good on the mic, Vince couldn't help but give him the occasional spotlight. And that, of course, is our boy, Roddy Piper. That's my dad.
I thought you were going to say that a lot better.
It's actually like my dad's like one of his favorite wrestlers. Like, yeah. Roddy Piper is like legit. I think him and like Ultimate Warrior are my dad's favorite wrestlers for sure of that era.
He was like the punk rock 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. He was perfect for this fucking role.
Oh, yeah.
The Hot Rod became a wrestler during the territory days and witnessed the destruction of the territory system by the likes of Vince McMahon, as covered in our Hell in a Cell episode a few years ago.
Right.
Piper was a talented wrestler who utilized his Scottish heritage to create a hot-tempered character that fans loved.
Yeah, people lose it when those fucking what is it, the thing? What's the instrument?
The bagpipes?
Bagpipes!
Yeah, and his theme song was like a bagpipes, and he came out in a Scottish kilt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dude was badass. And to piss off his enemies even more, he would give him the occasional kiss on the lips, and then a smack on the face, and then a headbutt to the fucking face. Dude,
oh, yeah.
dude rocks. But he may, did I lose my spot?
Yeah,
here we go. Vince used his talent to turn him into a, manager? Mm. Again, Piper was only 6 foot, so Vince didn't see him as a main talent right away, but thanks to Piper's promo abilities and prowess in the ring, McMahon, would have no choice but to occasionally, give him the spotlight. He made himself a household name I am drinking way too much coffee here. He made himself a household name starting in 1984 with a segment called Piper's Fucking Pit, dude. I remember this. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I remember
Piper's
this.
Piper's Fucking Pit, dude.
Where he would interview wrestlers and start beefs that would eventually lead to matches. His segment really hit it big when he insulted Jimmy Snuka's Polynesian heritage and attacked Snuka by smashing him over the head with a coconut.
Oh my god.
I've seen the highlights of this. This is insanely fucking awesome.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, the 80s were a different time.
Yeah, you could get away with that. Good times. Everybody's on cocaine.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Piper's Pit ran from 1984 to 1987, and throughout, Piper's popularity only grew, and the desire to give Hollywood a shot grew with it. It was in 1987 where Piper's Pit, and thus the Hot Rod himself, would gain major international recognition, as it was the backdrop for the unexpected heel turn of Andre the Giant, where he would challenge Hulk Hogan for a match at WrestleMania 3. Shit.
We all know this one.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. Piper was booked at the same event in a hair versus hair match against adorable Adrian Adonis and would bill it as his retirement match. In the crowd witnessing this event, one of the biggest wrestling pay-per-views of all time was longtime wrestling fan John fucking Carpenter.
Hey.
You know, that's one of the things that I forget about John Carpenter, but every time I remind myself, it just pleases me greatly.
Right? he's like a fucking wrestling nerd.
Yeah.
Seems like a cool, awesome dude.
His first actual writing gig was writing wrestling articles.
What?
I never knew that.
Yeah,
that's one of his first ones ever.
That is so cool.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love that. And the two would have dinner after the show, and Carpenter knew Piper would be the perfect star for his next movie. And on this, Carpenter would say, quote, Unlike most Hollywood actors, Roddy has life written all over him. He has been hit so many times that he is really broken up. He even walks funny because his pelvis was shattered and his back was wrenched. He is definitely not a pretty boy. He's the toughest guy I've met. You run a truck in a Roddy, he would still be standing.
I'd believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can buy it.
Dude, fuck. Dude, there's this insane promo of Roddy Piper that I've watched when the WWE Network first dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I would watch like old school 80s stuff, like things that I missed that was like my dad's generation of wrestling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's this fucking promo of him calling out, I think it was either Hulk Hogan or somebody else. He's drinking beer out of a... I'm sorry. He's drinking soda out of a glass bottle, like a Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking breaks it. It didn't break at first, and then he breaks it, and then he starts fucking bleeding.
Oh.
Like, he cuts himself on purpose. He's like, this is how far I'm willing to go for you. I'm pretty sure it was Hulk Hogan. And he's like, he throws the broken stuff at the camera guy. You can see the camera moving. And he's like, this is how far I'm willing to go for you. And then he's like a bloody mess.
Damn.
AD took a screenshot of that and made a button out of it. And then just like a bloody, like, Roddy Piper just pointing at the camera with face covered in blood. And
damn.
She was insane. I'll pull it up.
Yeah, no, I want to check that out.
I'll pull it up after the show. Yeah.
Oh shit. Well,
yeah.
Well, he got his star. So let's see how this actually came together. So we're going to put these fucking glasses on, baby. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
There it is. Like a wife putting on sunglasses.
So Carpenter didn't receive much resistance from the studio, despite his very anti-consumer message, with the only notes wanting the aliens to be cannibals to appeal to the quote-unquote, in his words, lowest common denominator. So, again, he does not like people messing with this message.
Yeah.
I know that, like, I'm a little out of it today because I read cannibals as cannabis at first. I was like, what the fuck?
Dude, I happened to do the same thing. I saw the same thing.
You can only
it's
make
like sublime plays in the background.
All the
yeah. Meanwhile, Wyatt's holding cannabis.
Oh, yeah.
Bleep. Anyways. So. However, seeing as the budget was so fucking tiny, he got away with telling the studio to fuck off immediately.
No.
Well, that's Carpenter's way. And
more,
I totally...
More directors need to do that.
Yeah, say it the way
say,
it's spelled.
I'm going to say my typo right here. Vince McMahon. McFucking Man actually didn't want Piper to shoot the film at all. Instead offering to find Roddy a different film to shoot within 4 weeks. And,
what?
You know, when asked... Piper knew it was bullshit. He knew it was stringing him along. So when asked why, Piper said that Vince is just a straight-up control freak. And as a result of this whole dilemma, Piper quit the WWF at the time to make this film.
Mm,
wow.
Yeah. There's a Howard Stern interview like years ago, like early 2000s, when Roddy Piper was on that Howard Stern show. He talked about this, and he talked about Vince and how much of a control freak
he is. Especially in the 80s, too.
Oh,
Vince They Live was shot in good old downtown Los Angeles, baby.
Yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. And Carpenter would bring in real life, quote unquote, in his words, homeless folks, as background characters, which Roddy actually appreciated as they were able to feed them and provide them with paychecks.
They don't do that shit at all anymore.
No.
Yeah.
It's like non-union.
Back in the day when I was doing a lot of extra work, I was cast as a homeless person, and like next to us was actual real homeless people.
Oh.
And they're paying us to pretend to be homeless people.
You're like looking at their moves. You're like,
I was like, all right, yeah, mimicking.
Jesus.
Like,
my arm. Jesus, that's fucking horrible. Yep. But still, because of the location of the production team had to literally pay off gangs to make sure no one troubled them on set. Because downtown in the 80s was fucking insane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Piper actually loved his wife so much at the time that he also refused to take his wedding ring off on set. Which is why it's actually featured pretty prominently throughout the final film, despite the character not having a wife.
That we know of.
Yes, that we know of. Very mysterious character.
Okay.
True. Mm-hmm.
He's an unnamed man.
Yeah. The line...
Sense of prequel.
Right? The line, I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum, came from the hot rod and fucking self.
Nice.
It was a line he actually wrote down to one day use during a wrestling promo. But Carpenter found it so good and in character that he actually wanted him to keep it in the film. So
that's fucking awesome,
right?
That's hilarious. There's so, when I was watching this movie, there's so many times where he goes from like a normal dude believing in the American dream to like all of a sudden a wrestler, like
it's
dropping news.
I noticed that. Like I was just like,
yep.
What happened? What? This shift just occurred.
This is, he went from, like, normal dude to Duke Nukem.
Yeah, you're really good.
Duke Nukem's character is actually based
exactly,
off of this,
too. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
And Piper actually found it easy, though, to get into character.
I'm sure
as,
he did.
Yeah, his character's name is John Natta. As he actually grew up living in the streets, saying, quote, "I lived on the street myself, so it didn't take long to kind of get the feeling of what's going on. Everybody's got their own little life, and they think that's it, and nobody's helping nobody." So, yeah, if you didn't know, Piper grew, like, he was homeless for a long portion of his life, actually, and he saw a lot of fucked up shit, so he kind of really, really gelled with the character.
Especially the beaten authorities part.
Oh, him and Carpenter actually got along really well because they both had an anti-authority instinct going on right there. Yeah. But on this, though, Piper actually found the scene where the police attacked the homeless encampment. He found it very painful to shoot, as Piper had actually witnessed almost the one-to-one thing happening many times growing up in the streets where he grew up.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, so it was giving him... it was actually made him really sad to shoot this particular scene. Yeah. But what didn't make him sad was this next scene, because Roddy Piper.
It's kind of funny to, like, dive deep into these emotions for this movie about running around shooting, like, aliens and shit.
Right? It's like parts of it are really, like, personal to him, and the other parts it's like, okay, wrestling fucking time.
Yep.
So, Roddy Piper and Keith David rehearsed their fight scene for 3 weeks.
That was a long fight scene.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
It was a very long fight
scene.
I love it.
Opting to actually hit each other with the exception of striking the face or the groin. So, the scene was only supposed to last 22 seconds, but expanded as they practiced the fight in the production studio's backyard. Carpenter loved it so much, he kept the entire fight intact in the final cut, which runs over 5
Yeah, I fucking noticed
it's
that.
It's so awesome.
Yeah.
And that is so cool.
At first I was like, okay, this is cool. I was like, this is going on for a while.
Yeah.
I know, I was just like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you think,
like,
it's over, it's
like damn, they're like really fucking each other.
Yeah, I don't know if it's in the script or not, but I've watched a South Park episode.
That's coming up.
That's coming up also. I saw that before they lived.
Before this
lived,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is where South Park got it.
Well, one more detail I forgot to include is Keith David also, he wasn't a professional boxer, but he did a couple stints as an amateur boxer. And so...
you can tell by his, like, movements.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Piper in interviews later on be like, Keith hit the shit out of me, and I fucking love it.
Loved it, bro.
Yeah, he was about it. Oh,
I love
sure.
how down Piper is. He's like, I'm fucking down.
Yeah.
Man. Let's do it, man.
I can see why Carpenter was like, I can't take full credit for this movie. So, success or stifled, I think that says.
Stifled, that's right.
I can read. Now that the film was complete, it was time to promote it, and Carpenter urged Piper to talk about the political themes in interviews. Piper opted not to, as he felt since he was in the U.S. and on a green card, he didn't feel comfortable talking about American politics. Additionally, he kind of liked writing and didn't 100% agree with the philosophy of the film.
He's an actor. Yeah, right?
That's pretty funny.
Hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
He's kind of like, no, man, you know, it was a fun movie, but... critics at the time were mixed on They Live, I bet. But contemporary reviews are a lot more favorable. It has 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, with the critical consensus reading, "A politically subversive blend of horror and sci-fi, They Live is an underrated genre film from John Carpenter." It is, in fact, a film from John Carpenter.
Yes.
At the time, the Washington Post wrote of the movie, "It's just John Carpenter, as usual, trying to dig deep with the toy shovel."
Jesus.
Damn.
You know, I always think I'm brutal with my reviews, and I read shit like this, I'm like, damn!
In the 80s, they had no chill.
Yeah.
No fucking chill.
Oh, no. No.
The Philadelphia Inquirer states, as a movie, They Live is lethargic. As election propaganda, it's terrific.
Damn.
What movie did they watch? They Live had to be pushed back 2 weeks so it wouldn't compete directly with Halloween 4, ironically. The return of Michael Myers. But this turned out to be a good move as it opened at number one at the box office to literally everyone's surprise.
The studio had no faith in this movie.
I didn't know.
They had no faith.
I didn't expect that until I read that sentence right now.
Yeah. That's insane.
That's crazy. Carpenter was still unsure how the general public would react to the movie, noting an experience at City Walk where a kid walked out of a screen disappointed and confused. On this he says he had been brought up with Rambo film. He was expecting it to be a, I don't know.
Jingoistic.
Jingoistic.
Mm-hmm.
You expect a lot from someone who came from the American educational system. And rah-rah, and it bothered him a lot.
Is that crazy?
I mean, compared to Rambo, I guess it's a little less action-packed, but I mean, it's still, like, over the top. Like,
yeah, they were
the
like,
fuck?
Oh, what, yeah. Rambo 4 at this time or something like that, where it's all super insane action.
I mean, I was watching it, and I was just like, Jesus Christ, you're just shooting people. Piper credits the film's success as a stepping stone for wrestlers to branch out into film. I was thinking that. Saying, I was the first wrestler ever in the history of wrestling to star in a major motion studio picture that became number one at the box office of the weekend. And that gave the itch to I don't know how many wrestlers. The Rock. Not one of them to this day has put out a quality picture like this. That's a true. Well, you know, now that Dave Bautista stepped into the ring.
That's true.
But to star in one.
He starred in the... what's the Cabin Wood
Knock
thing?
At the Cabin.
Yeah, that was good.
I didn't see that.
It's really good.
I didn't see that one. That's
right. Where am I?
Oh, and not one.
And not one of them to this day has put out a quality picture like this, and not one of them has had a number one hit like this. He's probably still bright.
I think he died before Bautista got, like,
into
prominence.
Yeah, Piper died, like, what, 10 years ago?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
But even, like, with The Rock and John Cena and shit, I think he's
He was just still, like, They Live more than any of their films, that's for sure.
When Piper returned to Vince McMahon...
2015, okay.
Yeah, he was considered twice as valuable as when he left. Smart. Carpenter didn't understand the backstage politics of wrestling, but was glad to help out his friend.
Very cool.
Very cool. Yeah. This seems like a genuinely good dude.
Right?
They're both good dudes.
They Live disappeared surprisingly quickly from the U.S. box office, but still managed to make a healthy enough profit to be considered a small hit. However, after this film, Carpenter would never have another commercial breakthrough, and even this one was... And even this one was lost to time. But came back big as a cult hit.
Absolutely.
As most great films do.
Absolutely.
That's right.
That's usually where I pick this up.
Yep.
I do feel like there's some, like, shenanigans with this political message, and they're like, okay, this is, like, too, like, political and anti-Reagan. Let's just pull it from theaters.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I kind of feel like that was the vibe back then.
Like, all right, we'll let you release your movie, and they're like, shit's doing well. Like, all right,
pull the rock. So, yeah, this is an interesting one. Anti-Semites, go away, please.
I was curious about this.
Yeah. By the way, you guys get to pick, do one Letterboxd review each. Red gets to do two. Wyatt, you are the guest. You get two Letterboxd reviews. Which one do you guys want? What color?
I will take purple.
Oh, no, you're getting red, man.
You're getting red.
Oh.
Yeah, you get to read two of them.
Yeah, I'll take purple. Cool.
I'll take orange. It's fine.
I knew you were going to take orange. I knew it. So, anyways, for a look at how contemporary audiences turned They Live from a forgotten but quality Carpenter film to a genuine cult classic, we have Letterboxd and Twitter controversy.
Woo!
Let's start with the former.
No, Twitter controversy.
Oh my God.
What?
How unexpected. So, on Letterboxd, They Live has a 3.8 rating out of 5, and of course, out of 28,000 reviews.
Mm.
Letterboxd seems to be pretty into it.
Do they?
Yeah. So, first review, Wyatt.
First review, hesitant movie enjoyer gives the film 3.5 stars, saying, quote, fucked up if true.
And then, which one did you pick, Phil?
I got purple.
Okay.
Is that purple?
No.
Is that blue?
Purple's right, that's blue.
You got blue. Okay.
We know our colors.
Yeah,
we passed kindergarten.
Look at us, we did.
Apparently not. apparently
we did. Yeah.
We're both colorblind.
Brandon Reese.
Neither of you can be in the Air Force.
I know, right?
Yep.
Brandon Reese. He doesn't rate the film, but he says, quote, Rowdy puts the sunglasses on, sees the world for what it is, takes them off, and says, it figures. Which is deeply fucked response, but it feels real, it feels earned.
That was my thought, too. He very quickly goes into just like, oh, okay.
Right, yeah.
Oh, so there's more to this shit.
Yeah.
Figures. All right, and here's where Brandon O'Hare gives it 3.5 stars, pointing out, quote, would have been fun if one of the magazines at the newsstand was normal even after he puts the sunglasses on. just like obey, consume, obey, obey, and then Golf Digest.
Adam Bolt gives it 4 stars, saying, "I'm here to eat ass and chew ass."
That's the best review. Yeah, good. Are you in?
Yeah. Love it.
I somehow knew you would get orange. So. And finally,
thank you. Finally,
Joe gives it 5 stars, saying succeeds along every possible avenue: horror, action, science fiction, black comedy, social satire, chilling depiction of paranoid schizophrenia, and wrestling match.
Yeah.
All the possible
all of it in there.
Everything you need.
All of it in there.
Oh, funny, funny. So, They Live is considered a masterpiece of the quote-unquote Hollywood left, as Carpenter is actually a big ol' lefty. But throughout the years, it garnered a different reputation among right-wing circles. Yeah, because many in the darker corners of the internet considered They Live an allegory for the Jewish control of the world and all the conspiracy theories that came along with that particular one.
Boom!
Yeah.
Kanye West.
That's true. Don't let him watch this fucking movie. No, anyways, things actually got so heated in debate circles across the web that Carpenter himself actually had to address it on Twitter in 2017.
What?
Saying, quote, "They Live is about yuppies and unrestrained capitalism. It has nothing to do with Jewish control of the world, which is slander and a lie."
Wow.
Yeah. He straight up called it slander. He's just like, don't associate me with this. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
It takes a lot of ownership. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm all for killing like Reagan conservatives. That's too far.
So there was a plan for a remake of They Live from director Matt Reeves.
What?
Really?
AKA Phil's boy?
Mm-hmm. AKA Phil's boy. But perhaps from, at the time, a lot of online backlash, because it was 2011. It was Planet of the Apes, Matt Reeves. Those plans changed to a re-adaptation of 8 o'clock in the morning, which, of course, inspired this particular film. However, no updates have been reported since 2011.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, neither have I.
So, They Live has actually been referenced in numerous other films, video games, and TV shows. South Park, most famously, even did a shot-for-shot recreation of Piper and David's fight scene in the episode Cripple
I had
fight!
No idea. That's fucking hilarious.
Dude, have you seen that?
Yep.
I've seen that, but I didn't know that it was
It's shot for fucking shot. It's long as fuck, too.
Yeah.
Just like in the movie.
That's hilarious.
Put on the damn hat.
Yep. Put on the damn hat, dude. You were going to put on the damn hat, too.
That's fantastic.
That's funny as shit.
Rewatch the scene. It's funny.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
But it's also been in numerous best of lists for cult classics and has been studied in universities since its release, being a favorite among academics worldwide. Yeah. So Carpenter has actually been adamant about his thoughts on politics and what They Live represents in the years since. And just in case anyone's confused, here's where he stands today. Quote, "The 80s never ended. The Reagan Revolution never ended. Although now there's a pull toward the left, I admit that. The right is, in this country, the right is lost. What they want to do is beyond Reagan. They moved so far to the right. And it's really unrestrained capitalism I'm criticizing." And I love his tone in this interview. He's like, "I'm a capitalist. I love capitalism. I love making money.
I like money.
But unrestrained capitalism leads to depressions. It leads to the recession that we had. The 80s never ended. They're still here. They're still living on Earth, exploiting us. We need the glasses more than
ever."
Yeah.
"We need the glasses more than ever."
I know, right? The fucking snaps.
Yeah. Dude.
All right. Let's get those little fucking special spectacles on right now. Wyatt's already got us there.
Hell yeah.
And see what's really going on with Carpenter's cult.
What's going on?
Yeah. What's going on?
I threw in some sunglasses.
Me and Webster's regular ass glasses just to see.
Normal, you're blinded, man.
With normal capitalism.
We know the fucking truth.
We know the truth, bro. We're going to get in a 5-minute long fight scene.
I know, right?
Put on the glasses.
I was so surprised how like brutal it went too. It was like, damn, I would have tried so many other steps before doing back
just straight
many rows, like bang,
back Starbucks onto the freaking floor.
Oh, that's great. So now that we're here, guys, what's everybody's thoughts on They Live? Wyatt, your guest, so you get number one.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'd always heard about this movie, known about it, but I hadn't seen it until you asked me to do this, and I was like, cool, this is a great excuse to watch the movie. And I watched it last night and this morning. I really liked it. I think since I saw it now, mm-hmm. it doesn't have that like nostalgia effect of like, oh, this is a fucking classic, man.
Yeah.
But I still really enjoyed it. It's very fitting for me personally. I'm going down a bunch of conspiracy rabbit holes lately, so this movie fit right in with where I'm at. Mm-hmm. It made me like miss the 80s films, because I was watching it noticing like so much about this like is not good in terms of like the fight scenes or some of the dialogue and shit, but it's still just so entertaining.
Yeah.
And I was not like, especially his gun that he never fucking reloads. I noticed that shit. The 80s guns were fantastic. His shotgun is very accurate.
Very extended.
It was accurate and it never ran out of bullets.
Yeah, he's shooting people in a bank. Like, there's no way you'd be getting such precise shots. But that being said, it just reminded me, like, but it was just made out of like fun, you know? It wasn't like, oh, it's fucking stupid. Thing with it. It's really weird to me to when I see movies about exposing like the government and psyops and media manipulation, because I'm like, it's like actors calling that out, but mm-hmm. it's itself is like kind of
you are the establishment.
Well, sort of, but it's like
it's a studio production.
Yeah.
It's like kind of a repeating like circle, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird, interesting perspective to have on it.
Yeah.
That being said, I like the movie. It's fun.
All right. It's a good one. Webster, what do you say?
I wanted to like this movie more than I did.
I knew it.
It was fine. Like, because, like, here's the thing. It's like, this movie should be everything that I love in a horror film. It's 80s. It's John Carpenter. It's schlocky. It's, like, just schlocky enough that, like, I should be on this, like, white on rice. Like, mm-hmm. I should be all over it. Unfortunately, it just didn't really hit the mark for me. Like, the pacing was a little off for me. The dialogue was a little off for me. It was difficult for me to follow along the movie. There were parts that I was just like, this didn't need to be here, or this was completely mm-hmm. unnecessary.
I can agree with that. Yeah.
I wanted to like this movie, and did I enjoy it? Yes, but I feel like I could have enjoyed it more, and that was the shame.
Yeah.
That was the shame of it for me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that pretty much.
But I've been told to watch this. This is one of my dad's favorite movies. So.
Oh, dude. It's every dad's favorite.
Dude, my dad watched this movie way before I ever did.
This bubblegum line, my dad said it all the time.
My dad would tell me about that shit mm-hmm. all the time. When I was a kid, he's like, oh, hey, Roddy Piper was in a movie called They Live. You should watch it. And I was like 10. And I'm like, I have no intention. But.
Oh, that's so funny.
And now you're on a podcast about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you gotta go tell Papa Webster.
Proud of me, Dad.
Fuck you.
it was mid, Papa. It was mid. All right, we go for it, Phil.
Yeah, I love this movie. Yeah, for sure. Definitely agree with Webster about the pacing issues. Mm-hmm. For sure, I've noticed that ever since I first watched this movie. Like, I think I was like in high school. I got into this movie around the same time I started getting into like art, graphic design, video production, and stuff like that. My graphic design teacher in high school actually introduced me to Shepard Fairey. Was like brand new at the time. The Obey Giant was already making its deal like in the early 2000s and stuff mm-hmm. like that, right? And that's where I was like, oh. And then when I watched the movie, I was like, oh, is this where Shepard Fairey got the idea? It's like sort of. Also, and then this is where, you know, a lot of like subcultures got their thing is from this movie. And I'm
that's
like,
true.
Okay.
Well, a lot.
And I'm like, all right, I see that. And then I was like, I was a teenager when I first saw this movie, and at the time I was already like 25 years old, 20 years old or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, or, I don't know how, when did this movie come out?
88.
Oh, so it was like around as old as I was then at the time when I was in high school. So like, and yeah, so it's still cool, honestly. I love it. It's something that I revisit, like, every few years here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude, I dig it. I dig it a lot.
I can see it being your type of shit.
Dude, fuck yeah. No, I really, I fucks with this movie heavily. I really do. No, I really love this movie a lot. It's cool as fuck. For me, it's not a cinematic masterpiece.
Yeah.
For somebody like John Carpenter to do this, like, there are some issues where it's like, why was this scene here? You know, yeah. It's like, you know.
This fight scene's really long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually have no problem with the longest fight scene.
I didn't either.
As David Lynch would say, who gives a fucking shit about how long a scene is? Like, I think it's a great film. It's fun as fuck. Totally, totally understand why it's not everyone's cup of tea. But yeah, that's me. That's for sure. I dig it a lot. Oh wait, we're not reading it, huh?
Not yet. It's coming up. Yeah, we'll do the ring at the end.
We just kicked off discussion.
Yeah, we're just discussing.
We're starting, baby. Yeah. Just get out of here.
I dig the, and I also dig the allegories. I like how John Carpenter had to come back like 20 odd years later to say, hey, it's not what you assholes keep talking about on the fucking internet. It's actually about this. You know, it's.
I wish more creators did that.
Yeah.
Wish that, like, you know, when things get co-opted into things that they shouldn't be, and then like the creators like have to come out and like release a statement where it's like, it's not that.
Yeah.
You're reading into it. Like, that's
better. Right? I feel like some like to see the controversy fester a little bit, and then they're like, oh, okay, now I'm going
to
fucking.
It's because it spikes their fucking numbers. I'm sure. Right. I mean, not, it's completely not even, it's apples and oranges, but like, I'm sure Titanic, the lore is doing great right now.
Oh,
fantastically.
Yeah.
Fantastically.
Phil was watching it last night.
My Heart is on the charts right now.
What does Celine Dion have to say about this?
I need to see her statement.
Sitting in the bathtub.
It's actually not about this.
Just pouring champagne.
Yeah. She's like, send another one down there.
Send another one down there. That's comedy. Oh, that's funny.
Oh, that's fucked up.
But yeah, that's my thoughts on the
movie. Anthony, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this fucking movie, actually. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would, I think, because I feel like movies are so fast and so structured nowadays. I kind of like a loosey-goosey movie like this.
Yeah, I know exactly.
It is a very loosey. It is meandering in parts, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like, there is. But as somebody who has a hard time paying attention, I made a point to, like, put the phone down.
Yeah, I did too, actually.
And I, just something about 80s cinematography. And also, I'm a fucking, you know, I'm a goddamn local now. So when I see downtown, it's kind of scary how, like, good they portray it in this shit, because it's also not portrayed nicely. But also
especially
accurately.
Especially at the time,
Oh, my gosh, no. This is, this is my shit. This is, like, definitely my kind of jam. Mm-hmm. Especially also, you know, me, I'm, like, very big into politics and things like that. Narratives and, you know, that's all. And I fucking hate Reagan. So it all comes together for me, like it's tailor-made for my style. It has flaws. It has very clear flaws. But what it does good, it does, like, brilliantly. And it's that I think most of the movie is really fucking good.
Yeah.
It does lose steam. It starts to lose steam for sure.
Yeah.
Like the third act,
Somewhere in the third act for sure.
There's...
That's a criticism I've always had for so many years. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, it's always that third act. There's even been times where I've fallen asleep.
Yeah.
Like watching it at home. Like,
that's
fuck.
Just normal for me now. We're in our 30s. That's
I had a hard time, like, just like you said, for the pacing. Like, are you having to, like, someone who's easily distracted during movies, like, putting your shit down and just, like, paying attention. I had such a hard time with that for this movie. And
because there were times where...
It's hard. Like, there, like, I don't know. And maybe I need to give it a shot when I'm, like, not as, like, having a rough time.
Yeah.
And, like...
Just be a little higher. Just be a little
higher. Just be a little more stoked.
It's a little higher. Just a little higher. Just a little higher. Just a little higher.
Was this your guys' first time watching this?
It was my first time.
It was my first time.
My first time?
You're what? At my spot?
At your spot?
Oh, what?
Yeah,
oh,
that
shit.
Was my first time.
I thought you had been seeing this.
No,
okay,
dude, I've only seen, like, portions of it.
Did you guys have, like, a group watch?
For a little bit,
sort
but we
of,
got a little too lit.
Sort of. We got really lit.
I had to go back,
we watch it in
full. Because I was watching it with this fucker, but we were
super
big. Claws and vodka.
Oh my god.
Claws and vodka.
That'll
we threw vodka in our claws.
I used to do
that. Yeah.
Wow.
We're madmen.
Fucking maniacs.
Yeah, we're fucking maniacs.
Didn't
on
make
Saturday.
It through the movie?
Yeah, no. But I think my, you know, hungover, like, medicating myself with weed ass.
Yeah.
Like, looked at the movie and was like, okay, you know what? I'm absorbed in this right now. I'm just going to forget everything.
Yep.
But no, honestly, like, the political message in here is so on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think it works in the film's favor. It's, everything's a little schlocky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just good schlock. So, you know what? Give it to me, Carpenter.
Well, it's still, like, over the top, too. It's not straight up, like, just Yeah. It's kind of having fun with the narrative, I would
absolutely
say.
Absolutely. It's winking at the audience, but in a way that's not stupid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like, yeah, it does, absolutely. It'll make you think, but it's also kind of like this Mars Attacks type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. It doesn't feel like it's lecturing, I would say.
It doesn't feel like it's lecturing. No, definitely, definitely not. Good fucking point. I very much agree with that. So yeah, this is my fucking jam.
I don't think it's something to overlook, and I don't think it's something that it's like really shoving down your throat either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with it. And again, as a very recent watch, I'm really surprised how much I end up liking this movie. So
yeah,
I might like it less later on. Who knows? Again, the third act itself is not great, mm-hmm. but you know. And again, the characters die very unceremoniously.
Yeah, that was true.
But also, kind of works because they're not really relevant to the grand scheme of things. So you know, mm-hmm. that's just what they are. So mm-hmm. yeah, I'm good with it. Roddy Piper. Oh, this is a fun one. I mixed a couple of fun ones in here actually. So,
okay.
Roddy Piper was a forerunner in getting, of course, pro wrestlers into Hollywood and paving the way for the likes of Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Dave Bautista, and of course John Cena. Think of some of your favorite wrestlers or pro athletes. What kind of movie would you like John Carpenter to make for them?
Oh, man.
Damn.
Oscar Siren.
Michael Myers versus Tiger Woods.
There you go. That's a good
That's
one.
What I want to see.
All right. Are we back? All right. You know, I'll give it back to you. On that thought, Wyatt.
Pro athlete, do we want John Carpenter to make mm-hmm. the movie for? I'm saying Tiger Woods. I want to see him go up against Michael Myers. Be better than the last Halloween movie.
Oh, that's for sure.
Oh, God.
All right, I like that. John Carpenter's Halloween, but with Tiger Woods, definitely fucking up the PGA Tour. So. what do you think? Wrestler-wise, I never think
okay.
about this stuff. So
I think I got something here. All
right. All right. What do you got?
All right, we've mentioned Hulk Hogan. We've mentioned The Rock. We've mentioned Batista and John Cena. And this wrestler that I'm about to name, he's dabbled a little bit here and there, but he never really got that footing, you know. He never really got that pedigree, like most wrestlers did. And of course, I'm talking about Triple H.
No.
Triple H in a John Carpenter directed movie about Norse mythology with horror.
I agree 1,000%.
Because ever since I was a kid, I always thought Triple H would have made the perfect Thor. And of course, obviously he never got that. That went to Hemsworth. But if Carpenter were to direct a Norse mythology, Viking style, or whatever, Scandinavian thing, but give it like the witch treatment with some John Carpenter as Triple H, as like a farmer who's just trying to protect his fucking family, but he's out of nowhere granted mystical fucking powers where he has to take on fucking demons. Triple H, pedigreeing fucking Norse mythology fucking demons. Give it to me. Let's do it.
I'm with it.
Phil
right.
just pitched a fucking movie right there.
Yeah.
With John Carpenter's
ship
waves.
I would watch that.
Mine's very simple. It's the Hardy Boys, the, you know, Team Extreme, but doing the actual Hardy Boys storylines from the books.
Oh, shit.
All solving fucking mysteries. But with a bunch of other tiny children. But they are the adults.
Okay.
That's somehow getting into these misadventures.
Okay.
It would be fucking fantastic, and Carpenter would make that dark as shit.
Okay. Damn.
What do you think?
Okay, hear me out. A remake of Christine.
Oh.
Starring Rhea Ripley.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
We're coming up with some good fucking ideas here.
Shit, Webster.
So you're gonna have like a very hot
I know there's
car
a writer's strike right
a very
now.
Hot
we're all pretty cheap.
Mommy.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's true.
Do you hear that, Hollywood? We have great ideas. There's a writer's strike. We're all real
cheap.
More great ideas. Get Tiger Woods, Rhea Ripley, everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Be sure to get Rhea Ripley.
Yeah. And then we can combine them all in one movie at the end.
Yeah, I don't care what stage that party's in. Put them in the Hardy Boys movie.
Yep.
We can just do a flash move and just CGI.
Yeah, CGI. That terrible fucking CGI.
Dude.
Jesus Christ.
Oh man.
Okay, this is a loaded one.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It'll be a fun one. Carpenter claims that They Live is still relevant in a lot of ways. And what ways do you see They Live's message live on, of course, in modern day society?
This is going to be a whole other podcast.
Oh man. Modern society?
Yeah, contemporary society.
I mean, shit, dude. This could go.
Yeah.
Not just both ways, like left or right. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But it could also go in many ways, too.
The media is lying to you.
Yeah.
You're all being brainwashed.
For sure, media, the hard left, the hard right, Hollywood itself.
Yes.
Dude, this could serve for so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. From, like, from like Kamala Harris to fucking Alex Jones, dude. This could go many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've been heavily going down this type of like media manipulation realization stuff, having like worked in Hollywood stuff a bit, and seeing how
not
like
all angels.
No, I mean different types of angels. On
it's
a
not
tray
all,
that we'll have to,
it's
like,
not
sort
all
it
glamour. What?
But I mean, I still love a lot of aspects of it. But when you notice a lot of the manipulation in terms of like advertising, I especially noticed it with Rings of Power. When they did the fake super fans, and it was obvious it was all scripted and fake, that was like my sunglasses moment where I was like, what the fuck? And since then, yeah, like, I often feel like this dude walking around with sunglasses nowadays.
Yeah, dude,
yeah.
No, seriously.
I think it's just, it's changed from, obviously, the exact Reagan isn't around anymore, but the political parties now are operating under the exact same guises, all of them, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
When you've worked in marketing for so long, or any kind of digital marketing, you, and then especially for, I'm not mentioning any companies out there, but that I am closely affiliated with, you get a touch of like,
he's a shell. He's a shell.
You get a touch of like, you get a good glimpse, a bird's eye view, if some would say, of like how psychology plays a lot in this shit.
Yeah,
if you're someone who's interested in psychology and like marketing and like advertising and shit, all of this movie just is a lot.
Well, you gotta think that back in the days of who was Sigmund Freud? Do you remember Sigmund Freud's cousin that he created marketing? He created marketing. Burns something Burns.
Jesus.
But marketing used to be called the industry of propaganda. Propaganda was in
exactly
the name.
Yeah.
And they marketed it out of that and turned it into marketing. But, you know, marketing also pays my bills.
Especially now. Especially
yeah, marketing pays
all
of it. Yeah.
Pays all of
it. All of it.
Yeah.
But what
true.
Do you got to say, Webster?
So I actually take a different stance in this. So my background is in, like, sociology and, like, gender studies. And, like, for me, like, the big message, like, the one, like, the marry and reproduce one is the one that, like, I, like, honed in on where I was just, like, where now a lot of people are going in alternative routes of like how they live their life and like
they're not adhering to that
adhering
standard.
To like this like stereotypical standard of like once you get to a certain age like for me for example like I'm an old maid but like thinking about stuff like that from like a sociological perspective and people choosing to live outside of what is considered normal or like the nuclear family or like kind of building dynamics outside of that. So I'm thinking outside of like the political side of things and like, from, like the sociological side of things and like how those kinds of messaging, how we kind of have adapted from that and kind of rebelled against that now.
Yeah. And then I think that rebellion kind of gets into my angle a little bit because there's a protest from a lot of the people who are like, no, this is very traditional. Like this is the default. Like any other way outside of that is anarchy.
Yeah.
And what that results in is a way, obviously, to keep our attention, like you're saying. The parties both work in a certain way for certain donors, right? My big thing is agitated propaganda.
Yeah.
So the big thing for me is consume. It used to be products, still is products a lot of the time, but it's also consume the red meat we're giving you. Consume the messaging. Consume your antagonism towards a person that is different than you and has different values than you. If you could see, I think my They Live would be put the glasses on and see what the actual headline means versus what it's saying in real life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I always look at it like this. There's this, and John Carpenter hits him on the nail on the head with the unrestrained capitalism. There's an analogy where it's like a stockbroker has 10, and there's two people, left, right, and a stockbroker. You get 10 cookies. Stockbroker takes 9 cookies. And then he tells one of the other guys, hey, that guy's trying to take your cookie.
Mm-hmm.
So, pits him against
literally, yeah, exactly.
All the fucking time. I think They Live is, the stuff we've consumed has been a lot more accessible, and there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, these sunglasses have been doing a lot of work lately.
Yeah.
I think compared to even in the 80s.
Also, I mean, even now in comparison to the 80s, like, we could find a news source to affiliate with any kind of thought that we've ever had, ever.
Mm-hmm. And they'll, they'll game
and
their
they
way
do.
Into your eyes, too.
Yeah.
And they'll game their way for
them. And it's manipulated by politicians and corporations who use it for their own profit.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that, again, the private sector and government itself, there's so much more overlap than there was back then. And Reagan was the one that made that thing. This is the unfortunate truth.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at this movie from the time it was and kind of see, like, this all kind of seems like modest compared to what things we know are going on now.
That's a very good point.
I kind of dig what you were saying, Webster, because, like, let's face it, corporations are going to corporation, you know?
Yeah.
And politicians are going to politicians and you know, but also from a sociological standpoint, there is glasses to be put on also for that department
for the
too.
Nuclear family,
you know,
for
exactly, for families, for groups. Look, inclusion these days is huge right now, right? Corporations are
hugely weaponized.
It's very weaponized right now. And also, that's something too. Like, you know, I was like, all right, Corporation X, are you really trying to be inclusive, or are you just doing it because it's the thing right
now? It's that joke where, like, every company on July 1st changing their logos.
Literally.
Like that rainbow capitalism thing where it's like changing it from the rainbow logo to their normal logo. They're like, okay, we're done now.
Yeah, that really came to a head this Pride Month too. People are just kind of done with this.
And it's so funny you say that, because also, like, this Pride Month obviously was much worse than normal in terms of, like, bad news cycles and, like, antagonistic behavior towards it.
Yeah.
That shit was R&D'd back when they were doing bathroom bills.
Yeah.
Now it's just the fruition of that. Like,
I love hearing you guys say that, like, this year has been the worst ever. I remember when, like, I was, like, in college and, like, it was, like, every year it's always, like, the worst, like, for rainbow capitalism.
Yeah.
Like, it just gets progressively worse.
It does. Yeah. It absolutely does. Yeah. But I think it hit the cultural zeitgeist. Like, general audiences are, like, fuck.
And that's the thing. Well, I'd like to have friends on all types of sides. I know plenty of people who identify as LGBT, and I know plenty of conservatives who all agreed that, like, this Pride Month propaganda shit is fucking stupid. The overmarketing, the fucking advertisers.
Yeah,
it's just,
everybody's got a sense.
Yeah, it's just corporate propaganda.
Yeah, no, it's just like, there's different aspects to so many things. I think with They Live, the movie, the glasses was the standard corporations bad, you know, media bad. Now it's like, post-2020 is like, yeah, that shit is still bad today, but it's even now a broader picture now.
It's,
like,
a lot more manipulated.
Like, I mean, 2020 did something to society. It kind of, I guess you could call it the Great Awakening for a lot of folks.
It was a mass traumatic event for a lot of people. It really was.
And a lot of people stopped following big public figures. They stopped following big fucking people. Like, dude, all right, we're talking about wrestling. I used to be the biggest Rock follower ever, dude. I used to, like, Dwayne Johnson's new Instagram post just went on live right now, dude. Fuck yeah. Now it's like, now you're just fucking trying to sell me something.
Dude, yeah.
Fuck
he's
off,
fucking crashed
bro.
So hard.
Fuck
man.
Off. The Rock used to be a fucking hero to me, dude. Now it's like,
he's
fuck off, dude. You are, I know exactly what you're doing, dude. And I'm pretty sure it's happened to so many people. Not just in this country, but in the fucking world.
Yeah.
Post-2020, man. What a time to be alive right now.
Mm-hmm. I just think the tools of nowadays make things like They Live so much more, like, intricate and complicated.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as, oh, you just put on glasses and then you see it goes so much, like,
well,
deeper.
The glasses represent critical thinking skills. And
right.
Yeah.
And that shit is gone.
You know, that is a finely tuned skill that not everyone has nor wants, has the will to develop or wants to develop.
Or the people who run this shit don't want you to have.
Yeah.
Right.
Literally, and then move on to this. We're getting deep into this.
you wrote the questions.
No, the Texas legislature, right before COVID, actually made a point talking about, like, school books. And they're like, listen, you're doing too much stuff on critical thinking. And critical thinking, I think it was antagonizes the traditional nuclear family roles.
Right.
Like, they outwardly said it.
Yeah.
They said it in a statement that you can look up online right now.
That's nuts.
And people were like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, that's when they learned we can't message it directly like that.
Yeah.
We gotta throw the red meat and throw off.
And now it's twisted.
Any motivation to critically think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's turned into corrupting family values. We have to banned drag queens because they're corrupting family values.
That banned shows have been going on this entire time. Like, the most marginalized fucking group of people. Like, they're really taking over everything. Like, no. They're 2%. You just don't want to talk about your economic policies. You just don't want to talk about that.
That's freaking
because that would be a very different conversation. And we'd all get mad.
No, dude, it's just like George Carlin bit, where it's like, dude, they want you to just be obedient workers. Mm-hmm. They don't want you to have critical thinking skills. They like that. They just want you to say yes, sir, yes, ma'am. Like, I'll go ahead and take care of that right now. And
they want you to be
keep your head down. And that's it.
It was the quote was is like they want you to be smart enough to run the machines, but dumb enough not to ask any questions.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's
God.
Yeah.
George Carlin.
This movie and George Carlin fucked me up at 17.
Obviously.
They put on your proverbial glasses.
Yeah. I watched George Carlin for the first time during the Bush era.
George Carlin was where I felt like the chasm broke for me.
Right?
Like, I've been unplugged.
I owe my
Where are my glasses at?
I owe my atheism to freaking George Carlin.
Mama, no, I don't know about this fucking Jesus guy.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. You heard of George Carlin, dude? My mom's like, who the fuck is George Carlin?
He's the father, for real. Oh, good discussion, guys. I didn't even think we'd burn that one. Hell yeah. All
right. Going deep.
But I mean, on that, though, fun one. You've been given a pair of glasses and go about one of your regular-ass work days. And you notice some weird stuff as you wear them. Point out three hidden messages you noticed in your day.
Oh, God.
Yes. With, of course, these revelatory shades. Now, I'm going to add a caveat because I actually forgot to write this. The message that you're going to see attributed to this command. It's consume, obey, and reproduce. Where do you see that in your three?
Oh.
Okay. Well, in my regular place.
He's tapping the name badge for his place of employ that he cannot say.
It's definitely buy. Definitely consume.
Definitely consume. Okay.
Maybe even obey, too, for the folks that are affiliated with that company.
Well, where do you reproduce that? Where do you find? Where do you see that in your day-to-day?
When I go visit mom. When the fuck are you going to give me grandkids? No, I'm kidding. Shouldn't you say that?
Mm-hmm.
No, but I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, dude, reproduce, that's a good one. In my daily, day-to-days? Shit, man, I don't know.
Where is that subliminally pointed at?
Man, I don't know, man. When I throw on an R&B album and it's just me and Savannah, like, by ourselves.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're like, I know I can't listen to R. Kelly, but you know what?
It's Seal, Kiss from a Rose. When I throw on that song, shit.
Oh, my God. He sang that at my birthday for karaoke. It was fucking beautiful.
Thank you.
Hilarious.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
That shit was good.
Honestly, it cemented itself in my brain. It was so fucking beautiful.
I might put it in my story highlights.
I'm so glad.
Just Phil.
Some heart emojis next to his name.
Alright, who wants it?
So, where we see obey, consume, and
reproduce. In your daily life.
When I work, certain events that I won't mention either, but very A-list elite events.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking everywhere. And it's a weird thing to see as like a worker on it. I see, you know, like
the
walls that are put up and the things that it, like how it's put in place to make it the glitz and glamour and like shine of it all. Mm-hmm. So to see that and then see people walking in and to be like a part of it, but I'm kind of like in between, I feel, where like the part of setting it up so I know what it's actually made of, the part where it's the lights, what it's trying to show, and then as a fan coming in from that side too. So to me, that all is all of them. I just worked in an event where there were a bunch of TikTok and Instagram influencers. That was literally it. All of them were this fucking movie.
All three objectives in one thing.
It's all beautifully patented.
Exactly.
It's all well packaged.
Exactly.
It's super manufactured.
It looks so fancy and nice, and then especially with like influencers taking the pictures that make it look super fancy. You're like, dude, this is just like a shitty plastic wall.
And the influencers know exactly where their lights are at, so they can stand right by
us
so they can get those good angles.
Yep. Camera comes off. I gotta go take a shit up here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's very when you've worked in the industry and you see actually how the lights are put up and everything,
absolutely.
It's very interesting. Yeah. It's not all terrible. Because you can really appreciate when, like, Christopher Nolan comes out with a movie or something.
Yeah, of course.
But when you see, like, the really plastic motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think, Webster?
In my day-to-day life, I think that the obey would come from just my office. Just because the nature of the work that I do relies on compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that would be, like, the big message.
Yes.
Would be obey. Consume? I don't know. That's a tough one. Well, they both are. Yeah.
Just out and about?
Yeah, I guess it would have to be just, like, out and about. I would say reproduce maybe would be, like, a lot of the books that I'm reading.
You're like, I'm going through it right now. Okay? I have some dirty-ass books.
That's hilarious. That's funny.
Oh, that's good.
You set this up for yourself.
I never even think about it usually.
This would be a great question for other people.
Yeah. Reproduce is every fucking bot Instagram ass that comes up that wants my fucking data and they want to send me, and it's just like a male name and numbers, and I'm like, I'm not gonna fucking do it. But, you know, they're trying to create that drive, so you just click, well, maybe it's a nice looking little circle with a little highlight on it. No, but you don't do it.
Yep.
Obey is the fucking algorithm for sure.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Because unless you go outside of it and search something yourself, mm-hmm. it's be like, hey, you like this, right? But also, hey, somebody paid for you to because you like this, you're going to mm-hmm. also kind of like this a little too.
Have you seen that joke reel where it's like influencing my friends, like where it's just like yelling, like if I were to like take your phone and just start yelling like certain things that I want you to see?
Yeah.
It's just, like,
that's so
like,
funny.
Where it's like, I want my friends to start going to therapy. So it's like, I take my friends' phones and I just start yelling, therapy near me! Or whatever,
so funny.
Just
yeah.
so that they start getting therapy
ads. That's hilarious.
And consume is every pretty fucking picture because I've been wanting an iPad so bad I don't fucking need one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, mm-hmm. when it pops up, I look at the specs mm-hmm. and I look at the rumors and
honestly,
I'm like, hey.
I thought you had an iPad already.
No, I got a Samsung one. It's really great, to be honest with you.
You love your Samsung.
I do because I don't have any of the thread fucking text pop up when I'm looking at this.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. Oh, that's a luxury right
that's
there.
I know. No, I know. And that's the only reason why I don't switch over completely. But, yeah.
No, man,
but the design language makes you want to fucking buy it and consume.
Yeah, it's so funny that I totally forgot about how advertisement is like the algorithm these days. It went from like Madison Avenue in the 50s, like the Mad Men era of advertisement, to mm-hmm. the 80s version of advertisement, to now the social media digital era of advertisement.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane right now, dude.
I worked a secret AI event with like the top people involved, and most of them were talking about advertising and how it's going to affect that.
Absolutely. They get you in your bubble and you're like, here, everybody likes this, but
yeah, and that's
the, bubble,
and that's the thing is that like most people are aware of this type of thing, but then it's on such a level where I feel like I'm very aware of I have these glasses on. But then I also keep in mind, like, but it goes so deep that there's got to be parts I'm not even realizing.
Well, but no, that's the thing, though, is, like, and everyone loves to think that they're the ones who are, like, immune to it.
Exactly.
Like, no one's immune to
propaganda.
No one's immune to propaganda. No one's immune to it being influenced. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's never, like, the work is never done.
Yeah, so, like, to really be aware of it is to be aware that you could still be susceptible to it and
mm-hmm.
to try
yes.
to always, like, double check it.
So, bottom line, everybody at some point in their lives sells out.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom point is everybody kicks ass and chews bubblegum.
They can. They have to put it in
they
themselves.
Have the
they better.
Yeah, exactly. As long as they don't obey and consume too much and reproduce responsibly.
Spay and neuter your pets.
So, Matt Reeves' remake may have fallen through, but Hollywood being Hollywood, a new version may be inevitable.
Oh, God.
Which director, writer, production team can you see creating a new They Live?
Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez back together for Team Up.
Those special effects look nice.
Damn, dude. That would be pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele's version.
Dude, that's fucking...
Webster.
Damn. That fucks.
Hey.
That fucks
right?
heavily with that one, too.
Monkey Paw Productions. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
actually,
that.
Dude, that makes... really good sense.
I can't think of a better one.
Dude, Jordan Peele. I was, I was thinking, like, also, like, do a super grounded, like, non-IMAX camera Christopher Nolan could probably work. Because, like, early in his career, before the Dark Knight trilogy, he was doing thrillers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and then, so, like, I was kind of thinking, like, non-epic, more grounded, more grungy, more dirty, more fucking, you know, old-school Nolan. Not IMAX, clean, polished. Nolan, not that I'm complaining about the polished
version. I can't wait, bro.
Yeah, I can't fucking wait either. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, Jordan Peele, man. That just fucking goes together like lamb and tuna fish.
I think Tommy Wiseau should do it. Tommy
Wiseau. We've all seen Nope, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like, he's already gone the alien route, so I feel like
it's a natural transition.
No, but plus, like, the themes in his films... The metaphors, the allegories, the fucking, like, all the commentaries that he has in all of his films, just...
But would he do the violence?
Yeah.
Like, all the shootouts and stuff?
I think it would be... I'm not looking for, like, a one-for-one reach.
I think the movie does need those, like...
It needs violence. It needs violence. Yeah. This movie is a type of movie.
But Jordan Peele's such a good director.
Yeah, I'm not saying he can't do it, but he just hasn't really done something like that.
Holy shit, man. You know how Jordan Peele has made it clear. It's like, yeah, in my films, I just want black folks to be the star of the shows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, if that's the case... Get Winston Duke to be the freaking
yes.
Duke, to be the Roddy Piper character.
That'd be cool.
That would be fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Damn, I actually don't know, guys. I still don't know again.
Yeah, I think Jordan Peele for me. Yeah,
Jordan
for sure.
Peele really stole the show there. So as like an alternative, maybe do a TV show. Do a longer running version of this for a series.
I don't think so.
Yeah, give me a...
I'm done with TV shows.
Yeah, it works as like an hour and a half long movie.
give me Vince Gill.
But if it's... But
give me
Vince Gill.
Yeah.
All right.
Have you seen Breaking Bad?
Breaking Bad
treatment?
Yeah, Vince Gilligan would be pretty cool too.
Oh yeah, dude.
Vince Gilligan, yeah.
Because he's probably something to say in everything and it's a very complicated thing he says.
Vince Gilligan, I have no doubt in my mind that he would not hesitate in making it violent.
Oh, absolutely.
Jordan Peele would probably be like, can we make it not so violent? Like, you know.
Like more psychological.
Yeah,
shoots
like
psychological.
One person.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe he just shoots one person, not an entire people.
Not
like,
a bank.
Like Vince Gill's like, nah, dude, we're having fucking Heat style shootouts.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah.
Well, with that, guys, we only got one more question here.
Dun, dun, dun.
What would you rate They Live out of 5 ferocious punches from Keith David?
Oh, dude. This is going to be like a 4.5, man.
4.5?
I love the fuck out of this movie. Mm-hmm. It's got a couple of things that I've always been critical about. But yeah, those are just like minor things. Other than that, I fucking love this movie. It's fucking cool as hell. All
right. 4. Solid 4 for me.
Nice.
I think, again, it has its flaws, but it's also really fucking brilliant. And I think it deserves its spot as my 4 is always a great movie. It is a mm-hmm. great movie.
Yeah.
So, I'll say that.
I would say a solid 4, too.
Solid 4.
Think, yeah. Because I did really enjoy it, but I've seen, like, since I just saw it recently, I didn't have that, like, fuck, this is a great, like, movie. But still was, like, very much entertained and enjoyed watching it. We'd recommend it for fans of that type of style. So, yeah, I'd give it a solid 4.
Solid 4? All right.
Well, I feel like an asshole.
Just do it. Just do it.
I'm going to give it a 3.
3 is still a good rating.
You're fired.
No, I'm going to give it a solid 3. I think this is a perfectly decent, pleasant, enjoyable watch of a movie. It's not necessarily... I'll probably rewatch it at some point, but it's just not for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that is absolutely fair, because that's been the theme for these last 2 months.
Any final thoughts on They Live from 1988?
Reproduce and marry.
It's marry and then reproduce.
Oh,
you gotta do it in the right order.
I'm doing it the Mexican way. Doing it the Mexican way.
Alright, on that note, thank you so much everyone for joining us
on
They Live. Thank you so much, Wyatt, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Good job to come back. Yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Finale month of all time.
Next week, what are we doing next week?
What are your movies for sure, Webster?
Starts
with T.
Okay, so next week is going to be a really fun little movie. We're going to cover an entire... an entire franchise in one episode. And I
what? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, it's the whole thing.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
We could do the first movie. I haven't really decided yet.
Okay.
But the point is that we're doing this because our lovely, lovely friend of the podcast who made the Horrible People's Network logo and the People's Podcast logo made them for free under the single condition that we cover this franchise.
Damn.
Holy shit. Fair enough. Okay. All right. So, I'm getting hyped. Okay.
So we're gonna kick that off next week. I hope you guys, I know some of you are going to fucking love it. I know some of you are going to fucking hate it. So it'll be a good time. In the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcasting shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
And on npc.gaming.pod.
And on npc.gaming.pod.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop and on Turning Tables Pod. And you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
Yeah.
Film Rebel, where can we find you?
You can find me a couple places. I have the YouTube channel Film Rebel, where I talk about entertainment, movies, my reviews. If you like this show, you might like some of that. I also have another channel, Why It's Metal, which is really fucking blown up right now.
That's right.
I talk about heavy metal festivals, concerts. So check those out. And I have a band, Dark Insanity. You can check us out on Instagram. That's just Dark Insanity Official. Hit me up and follow me on all my shit.
Awesome.
And demand I come back here for more episodes.
That's right.
Yes. And on that note, obey.
That's right.
Consume.
Like I said, reproduce first and then just do it.
Bye, guys.
Yeah.